ISC is presented to you by Dark Hawk Nutrition. Dark Hawk Nutrition is the next evolution in sports supplements. Their pre-workout, protein, creatine, and other products are produced in FDA-approved facilities, third-party tested for quality, and are guaranteed clean. Use code IMPACT for 15% off of your entire selection at darkhawknutrition.com. That is code IMPACT for 15% off of your entire order at darkhawknutrition.com. What up, what up, what up? What is up, everyone? Thank you so much for tuning in to this third episode of the Backwards K Baseball Podcast. My name is Chris Asbrock, and I am your host tonight. And as always, I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Scott Kaiser. Scott, my man, how are you doing tonight?
What's up, brother? Another week. We are almost there. The offseason's almost over. It's baseball time this week. The games count-ish.
It starts this week. Oh, man. Like, for real. Oh, man. Oh, cannot wait. But in all seriousness, I mean, we got a lot to talk about tonight. You know, some news and notes. Like last week, we talked about the American League. This week, we're going to discuss the National League. And we're going to get into some real baseball that is set to be played this week. This week in Seoul, South Korea, we've got the Los Angeles Dodgers taking on the San Diego Padres in the MLB Seoul Series. So that's what's on tap for tonight. So again, thank you guys so much for checking us out. Well, Scott, since we've got a ton to get into, well, let's say we get into a little MLB news and notes.
Let's go for it, man. Start us off.
All righty. Well, Joey Votto still bangs. That is, I mean, the dude, it's unbelievable. And we talked about it last week. He signed with the Toronto Blue Jays, and first pitch he sees in spring training goes yabo, and it's unbelievable. This guy at 40 years old just continues to amaze. You know, he looks weird in a Blue Jays uniform, but it feels right, and that's the weird part about it. That's all I could really think of. I saw the highlight of it, and I was like, man, it didn't feel right, or it felt right, but it didn't look right, and that was the thing. So, Scott, what were your thoughts on that from Joey Votto?
I was impressed that he hit a home run off the first pitch, even more impressed when I heard that it was off Zach Wheeler. But then I kind of had to chuckle to myself when he rolled his ankle stepping on a bat in the dugout. Very old manish of him. So while some things don't change, the old things do change. Not many bats stepped on in his youth. But, you know, good to see a guy like Joey just roll out, still know how to hit. And I did see somebody ask the question earlier on Twitter, what if over the last 2 years, Joey was just kind of hurt and he's more similar to the 21 version, which if you remember back to that 21 version of Joey, I mean, it looked like the old, younger, more familiar version of Joey Votto. So if he can stay healthy, maybe a shorter spring training does that for him. Who knows what the Blue Jays are in for? It's a nice solid pickup. And if it doesn't work out, or, you know, he's pretty much what we've seen over the last, I'd say, 6 months of actual baseball activity, then, you know, he'll ride off into the sunset slowly and they'll just kind of phase things out. And that'll be that. But it's always nice to see a guy like Joey, who's had a pretty storied career, come out and just do things that we're accustomed to see him doing. I suppose it's better than going out there and get caught looking on three straight pitches.
Yeah, you don't want the backwards K in your first appearance. But, I mean, as good as it would be for the namesake here of the show, not for Votto himself. But in all seriousness, we had talked about it last week that it was a low-risk, high-reward deal for Toronto. And, you know, if he is more like the 2021 Votto, then – Toronto's got themselves, you know, a really good hitter. And, you know, it's only going to benefit the Blue Jays in the long run. The problem is, if it's not, you know, then you're going to have to – you'll have to cut ties with him, which will suck, you know, in terms of that's, you know, your hometown, you know, player, and you know, it's, you know, he's playing for his hometown team. But other than that, I mean, if it works out, you know, it's only a huge benefit. So it was awesome to see him, you know, doing work early on in spring training. But speaking of doing work, man, Gerrit Cole, we had talked about the, you know, the possible injury and what it was set to look like. Well,
he won't be doing work for a little while.
Well, yeah, he's definitely not going to be doing work. Word came out a couple days ago that he's going to be out 10 to 12 weeks with elbow soreness. There is what the original, you know, was the reason why he went into, you know, to get it looked at. He opted not to have Tommy John, which, you know, that's, you know, could go either way. But in this case, you know, he opted not to have it. It's really going to be rest is what it's going to come down to. And I mean, with, you know, with Gerrit Cole, a guy who pumps it up there and is the ace of the Yankees staff, that to me, that's a bit worrisome if I'm the Yankees. Because without Cole, man, it's going to be a tough it's going to be tough sledding for them, especially if he's going to be out possibly longer. If he comes back and has a setback or anything like that, it could be quite a mess for the Yankees.
Well, before we get too far into it, I do want to say hello to those in the chat. Hello, Rex says he's first one of the ballpark. Hopes he gets a bobblehead. We'll have that in the mail for you right away. good evening to Matt Barr as well joining us, and Sarah White also checking in the comments. Appreciate you guys joining in the comments. Yes. We alluded to it a little bit last week with the Yankees on the Cole front. They are fucking screwed to not put too fine of a point on it. They've reached out to, I know we've talked about them having conversations and it being an immediate pivot to Snell. We're going to talk a lot about Snell this episode, but he remains unsigned. And it looks like the Yankees are among a host of suitors that are balking at his asking price still this late in the game. So it appears as if, you know, Snell's not going to have a home, and that's not where the Yankees are going to go to fix that. I don't know what they do. I mean, on the one hand, sucks to suck, and I don't really care. But on the other hand, I mean, they traded for Juan Soto. They obviously had to re-sign Judge last year. He sat out most of last year with various injuries. Now this happens. Yikes. If you're Brian Cashman, you've made a career out of the earliest part of your career and putting together all of those world championship teams in the late 90s and then the early mid 2000s there. And the clock is kind of ticking. People are getting a little restless. I know that this isn't anything that you can account for and anticipate, but the rotation being built off of a bunch of other guys who have a sketchy injury history when you're talking about Nestor Cortez and Carlos Rodon, who both come in with injury question marks themselves. And then you traded away from the little bit of pitching depth that you did have to get Soto. I can't imagine that the natives are going to remain very happy there in New York if things don't change for the better really quickly. And I don't know what type of answer that the Cashman could look for. If they're not going to sign Snell, if they don't want to meet the contract demands of Jordan Montgomery, there isn't anywhere else to go. I heard Michael Lorenzen's name batted around this weekend as a possible guy just to come in and eat innings. But you're the New York fucking Yankees. Is Michael Lorenzen really any type of answer for you? Even if Cole was healthy, to add Michael Lorenzen to that rotation, is that really where the Yankees have fallen?
I mean, it's honestly, it's humorous to see what happened because, you know, we had seen the news, and I'll never forget the text you sent me with the Dylan Cease. I was at soccer practice, and I looked down, and you had sent that text about, like, Cease to the Padres, and I just started laughing. I was like, oh, man, like.
Because that was plan B.
I know.
Like, I mean, going to sign Snell and you're not going to do the Montgomery thing, if you're not going the free agent route, the number one trade chip this entire offseason has been in the back pockets of the White Sox in the form of Dylan Cease. I imagine that the moment the news trickled out and why the Yankees they played very coy with what was going on with Cole and how severe the injury was, I imagine that's because they didn't want to get price gouged out there with other teams knowing the same thing that pretty much any knowledgeable fan would know. They're screwed. They can't afford to just not do anything. They only have Juan Soto guaranteed for this year because he's a free agent. If you don't re-sign him, you've traded all those guys. You then lose him. You're in a giant hole there. Like, the panic meter in New York has to be pretty high. I'm loving it. And honestly, because Cease did get traded, that was another thing that I immediately mentioned to you, was I hope that somehow, some way, somebody ponied up for Cease just so that the Yankees couldn't get him. Because let's make it clear, I don't really think Cease is all that amazing. He's solid. He's fine. He can get the job done. He's the best of the only options that were out there available in the trade market. But he's not an ace in waiting. He isn't a one-to-one replacement for Gerrit Cole, but he's better than any other option the Yankees had. And so the fact that now he is now a San Diego Padre, it just fills me with delight.
I know your New York hatred it's simply amazing. Each and every day, you know, when we talk, we'll talk via text, and it's awesome. Just that the hate just oozes. I'm here to.
And those no bounds. People don't forget those 90 Yankees were. It was much at my expense, so I have no love lost with them. So,
but it's funny that the Yankees back in the day of George. This was never a problem, and George would simply go out and he would fix it immediately with money. And that's why, let's be real. That's why they were hated by a lot of people, is because they would go out and buy championships. But we were all jealous because we wanted an owner who would do the same thing. That's my reason for it. But now it's different, and they're having to play by the same rules that everyone, well, they don't have to, but they are playing by the same rules as everyone else. And it's bitten them in the butt. And now, with Gerrit Cole, again, your ace, Gerrit Cole, when healthy, is one of the best pitchers in baseball, plain and simple. He's appointment television when he's playing. That's when he toes the rubber, you have to watch it because he's that good of a pitcher. Now, I'm not as much of a hater as Scott is, but I will simply, I'll check him out when I get the chance because he's fun to watch. It does concern me when you have an issue with your UCL and Tommy John is an option and you choose not to do that. To me, that is a bit concerning. I know you take the Tommy John, you're out for a year plus. I get it. I totally understand. And that's not ideal for any pitcher. But it's just, this is going to be a reoccurring. My fear is, and this is my fear for the game of baseball itself, that it's going to be a reoccurring injury and we're going to be robbed of Gerrit Cole for over a year. And I'm just saying that in terms of baseball, as a baseball fan, period. That's the only reason I'm saying that. But, opting to not, get it taken care of, as opposed to resting it, then you're really putting your team, and I'm not blaming Gerrit Cole for this. He wants the dude's a game where he wants to be on the mound. I totally get it. But now, the Yankees want to sign Snell, and there's a whole, thing, but Snell is now connected with the Houston Astros. And imagine what that would be.
Before we get too far in the weeds on that, Matt pointing out that it's baffling that the Yankees are sitting on their hands, and you alluding to it with the old days of the Steinbrenner era, this would never happen. Something would have been done probably. They actually would have had a backup plan before Cole got injured, if we're being honest. It wouldn't have been to where Cole goes down and they're scrambling, or they're wondering, the trade for Cease either would have already happened, Snell would have already been signed, something would have been made to happen back then. I don't know what's changed. I don't pay enough attention to the Yankees on a day-to-day basis to know where they're at and why they don't push the envelope when it comes to spending money anymore. The luxury tax scares, I guess, even the tip top of teams when it comes to spending, but it still seems like some of this is, I don't know, unwarranted in the market that they play in, I guess is the best way to say. I don't understand why you wouldn't shore it up, if especially if you're pushing the chips in the middle to go get a Juan Soto, and you've publicly stated that you're doing whatever it takes to compete, kind of suggests that you're not. I mean, you either give up the capital, and Yankees have had this problem in the past too, where they've been reluctant to trade from their farm system because they believe very highly in their guys, which I guess is fine enough because they're the ones who scouted them and have seemingly the best idea on them. But we've seen plenty of other times where when they do finally trade these guys, or these guys end up in, you know, in the big leagues, they suck. They flame out. They end up, you know, playing in China or whatever it may be. So I don't understand why they hoard their prospects like they are, if they're truly worried about contending in the short term. And Rex brings up an interesting question that I did see bandied about, and I didn't really get any clear answer. But would the Yankees ever go after Trevor Bauer? Is that something that the boss would have done in his heyday? What do you think, Chris?
Oh, there was no doubt in my mind Bauer would have been a Yankee now or in the past. Hands down. If George was the owner, yes. Yes, he would have. Now, again, we talked about it last week. I think it's the consensus throughout the league that they are, you know, blackballing him a little bit. I think that's the case. He's actually set to pitch against the Yankees for, I want to say Diablos, I think is who it is. I think it's a Mexican team. I could be wrong on that. I briefly saw it on Twitter, but I did see that he set the pitch against them. I think it's March 24th is what I had seen, but I mean, yeah, Bauer would have been a Yankee. And again, if this was George still running things, there's no doubt in my mind the Yankees would not be dealing with any of these issues right now. They simply wouldn't be, because they would have had, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C, et cetera.
So in terms of Snell, which is a huge topic of conversation surrounding this and just the league in general, how the hell is Snell still not signed? How are we a week away from opening day and all the reports out there now are suggesting that the Astros are in on him, the Dodgers have moved in on him, we know the Yankees have had conversations with him at least once or twice this offseason, and you gotta assume that there's been others that have kicked the tires on him. But what in the hell is going on that he's turning down offers that would have paid him quite a bit amount of money early in the offseason? Now he's dictating that he won't sign for anything less than $60 million over 2 years, and he wants opt-outs after each of those two. What is he and Scott Boras and this whole thing? What is happening right now? Why is it that Blake Snell doesn't just sign with someone? I get it. You wanted this huge contract. You thought you were set to get a payday. But at some point, man, if you want to play ball, just get your ass out there and play ball. The league, the market is telling you, you are not worth what you believe you're worth. And you either sign for what a team is offering or you don't play. I mean, that's the beauty of professional sports, is that you don't get to dictate whether or not you're a part of it. It's a privilege to play in the league. It's not a right. And if you don't have a contract, if the league collectively decides that you're not worth the money you're asking for, you got to go elsewhere. There's nothing you can do to force their hand other than to come with hat in hand and say, I'll go ahead and take this deal, which I think you got to do at this point. Personally, I don't want the Yankees to be bailed out from this thing. Kind of hoping he ends up in Houston. Keeps him away from the Dodgers, because fuck them. They don't need any more help than they've already gotten. They've spent their billions of dollars this offseason. They've got enough all-star names. And while you and I collectively are not big Blake Snell fans, yeah, he's a competent enough pitcher who has ace-like tendencies and moments and qualities to where I don't want him to end up in New York to bail the Yankees out, and I certainly don't want him to end up in LA. So I guess the best case scenario, just based on the names we're hearing, is that he ends up in Houston, which would be interesting. And I think it immediately makes everybody hate the Astros just as much as they have over the past few years, although they've taken a step back on that front just because the Dodgers have made so much noise.
Well, going back to your point before, why hasn't Blake Snell signed? It's simply because his agent doesn't want to take another L. That's what it comes down to.
Scott Which is Boris, absurd well, this late in the game. Absurd.
Well, you would think so, but that's never stopped Scott Boris in the past, and that's the problem. The guy just he can't help himself. He overvalues. If you mean to tell me that Blake Snell is a $200 million pitcher, you're out of your damn mind. Not a chance. Blake Snell has had two good years, and in both those years, he won the Cy Young Award. I'll give him that. But he's been an average, mediocre pitcher since like the other years. He's got all the talent in the world. He just hasn't put it together outside of two. Now, last year, he was fantastic.
Was he, though? Because honestly, with the amount of walks he issued, the fact that he doesn't go very deep into games, he was good if you look at ERA. He was good at limiting the damage, but he stresses the bullpen. He taxes the other guys around him. He's a headache if you're a manager watching him pitch through these games. I couldn't imagine watching these games as a fan because, again, you look at the strikeout numbers, you look at the ERA, and you think, well, this guy, you know, he's an ace. There's nothing that opposing hitters can do. But he's basically his own worst enemy out there. And I know the end result is all that you're looking for, but it's obviously not worth the money he's asking for to the rest of these teams. They've obviously figured out the same thing. So, again, take your L. Take your lumps, admit defeat on this one, and just sign a deal. If you want to play baseball, get in and fucking play ball.
It's not that hard. It's simply not that hard. But I mean, I'm an eye test guy. Like, I'm not a big numbers guy when it comes to baseball. Like, I trust my eyes and what I see with the game in terms of, you know, how I will value situations in the game or, you know, players and like what their value is. And obviously I'm not, you know, qualified enough to be an agent by any means, but I mean, I'm qualified enough to know that Blake Snell is not worth $200 million.
So Rex pointing out that maybe Snell should get Kirk Cousins' agent.
I mean, why not? I mean, why the hell not at this point in time? I mean, it's absurd. But you know, if I'm Blake Snell, and again, we're at the point now to where we are literally going to have regular season games starting in 2 days. So whenever you're listening to this, the first game is Wednesday. Wednesday morning is the very first game of the year. I mean, we're 2 days away. That
who Blake Snell's former employer is involved in, by the
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Yes.
Another team that's chosen not to offer it or pay him this money.
They know. I mean, they're like, shit, we just have the guy, and you know, he just won the Cy Young for us.
We're
and
good.
I'm not gonna pay him $200 million. Like that. So and that's the thing, and that's what's amazing to me. But you know, you had talked about Houston being in on him. If Houston adds Blake Snell to their rotation, instantly they become the favorites in the American League. As if they're not already, they would nail that down. Because you've got to look at a rotation that's going to have Christian Valdez. Christian Javier,
yeah.
Franmer Valdez, Hunter Brown, JP France, and Jose Urquidy. That's as it stands right now, because you've got Verlander and Lance McCullers set to start on the IR. Verlander's only going to miss a couple weeks. He should be back by the end of April.
You mentioned Urquidy, though. He left this weekend with some elbow discomfort. So
fantastic. Awesome.
That might have been part of the reason that they were pushing or at least checking in on Snell.
And well, I heard that well before. I heard that like last week. So maybe they were looking into the future on that one. I did not hear the Urquidy part. Shit.
Yeah. He had an elbow issue over the weekend. I haven't heard a follow-up, but the same thing where it's like, they need somebody to pivot to. Why not at least check in at this late stage on a Blake Snell? But you add into the fact that he's going to have to come in, get acclimated to the team. I know he's been throwing on his own, I'm sure, and keeping in shape and is ready from a mental standpoint. But there's a huge difference in throwing to live hitters and going through spring training and amping up for the season the usual, like, regular way that these players do, and throwing to, you know, some of your buddies or whoever the hell it is that you may be doing it with, And then getting in there to a team most likely that he's completely unfamiliar with. Training staff, coaching staff doesn't know him, doesn't know how he operates or anything. They're all going to be figuring out each other. That's going to take another few weeks to get figured out. So you're looking at like another month before he's integrated fully into the program. And then you don't even know which Blake Snell you're going to get. Is it the Blake Snell of last year, or is it the Blake Snell we've seen majority of his career that's just kind of all over the place and has a 4.5 ERA?
And that's the problem. And that's what drives me nuts about guys taking, and this is a Scott Boras thing. He'll have these guys sit out until July. He doesn't care. But at some point as a player, again, the agent works for you. That's, you know, if you want to play baseball, let him know, hey, get me signed. I want to play here for this much money. Let's make it happen. Scott can make it happen. He's too damn stubborn. And again,
Scott can make it happen. It's just not Scott Boras.
Exactly. Yeah. Well played, Scott. Well played. Well played. But that's the thing, though. It's so frustrating to see guys. I mean, you still have JD Martinez out there. You still have Blake Snell. And you have Jordan Montgomery, which we have heard nothing on Jordan Montgomery to pivot to that. Why in the hell have you not heard anything about Jordan Montgomery? He wants to go back to Texas. Texas wants him, but it all comes down to the RSN, you know, monies and stuff like that, why Texas hasn't resigned him. But, I mean, good Lord, bring him in on a one-year deal until you get that all shored up and then move on from there. But, my God, why haven't we heard anything on Jordan Montgomery?
I'm wondering if Jordan Montgomery's in witness protection, because all the first part of the offseason before the introduction of Yamamoto to the scene, and once things kind of settled with Otani, the only two names we heard were Snell and Montgomery, and it seemed like any day. And then it was, well, they're waiting, and once the dust settles with the other two, then it'll happen quickly. Those two things happened. Well, you know, it'll be by before the start of spring training for sure, but, you know, there's this and that, and those deadlines passed, and here we are, week away from the season, haven't heard anything concrete about Montgomery, no rumors tied to him lately. I know you mentioned he wanted to go back to Texas, and I'm sure that was his first option, or has been his first option throughout this process, but Texas kind of made it clear early on that they weren't going to go there. I know they had conversations with him. Obviously, he wanted too much. Those didn't go very far. Texas had to deal with the money and the TV situation. They settled that. Then it looked like, well, they were going to shore up things in the bullpen. They were, you know, linked to Hader. Hader got priced out and ended up in Houston. And Texas basically just said, look, we've done all we're going to do. We figured out the money situation. It's not really going to work. Kind of hit Jordan Montgomery with the thanks for the memories. We'll catch you around. If he hasn't accepted that or doesn't want to accept it, that's on him. But I can't believe that nobody else has been linked to him at all. Even if you're just talking the usual suspects that have been mentioned in the other two, the Yankees, the Astros, and the Dodgers, none of those teams view Montgomery. And in the Yankees' case, they had him and traded him. So I get why maybe they aren't interested. It's a player that they had once, and again, I'm sure at the right price they'd take him, but if he's outside of their price range, it's probably much lower than what he would ask for going back there. But does anybody want Jordan Montgomery? Does Jordan Montgomery want to play baseball either? I don't know what the hell's going on, man.
It's crazy. I mean, we were talking about it, you know, earlier today. I mean, this is one of the most fascinating things that I can remember in terms of, you know, free agency and everything like that. Like, why? I mean, a left-handed pitcher who, you know, I was one, I could take him or leave him. I mean, that's kind of how I always approached Jordan Montgomery until I saw what he did in Texas. He got there, he was traded there, and it was like, okay, let's see what we can do. And he settled in. And without Jordan Montgomery, the Rangers do not win the World Series. Plain and simple.
For sure. Hands down.
Yeah, and that was the, you know, that was the crazy part about it all was, you know, for what he did, you know, he, you know, the guy deserves to get paid now. But you also got to look at, you know, the way the market is, and the market is dictating that you're not going to get what you're asking for. So sometimes you have to pivot and you have to swallow your pride and take what you can and then prove it to them later on. And that's just, you know, what we're running into right now. And it's, you know, if you're Jordan Montgomery, it's not looking good for you. But, you know, again, like I said, if it's a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal with an opt out or whatever it is to go back to Texas, Texas needs the pitching help because they got some dudes that are going to be out until, you know, middle of the season. So at that point, you got to kind of look into it and say, all right, you know, let's meet in the middle here. Let's make it work. Because other than that, Texas is the only team that I have heard connected to them. And that's, I mean, my God, that's been for forever ago. You know, we haven't heard anything since then. And it's just, it's been all quiet on the Western front for them. And again, it's just, it's stunning to me that it's, you know, that it's come to this. But again, got to make, you know, make sure your agent makes it happen. And that's not, unfortunately, what we're seeing here. So.
And I know we touched on Dylan Cease, and we're going to get back to that trade in just a second. But when we're talking about teams that could use a pitcher and tying this back to the Gerrit Cole injury, there have been quite a few injuries throughout spring training. None possibly bigger than one that was announced over this weekend for Yuri Perez of the Florida Marlins. Now, Yuri Perez is a young up-and-comer. A lot of you may not be super familiar with him because he plays for the Marlins. And quite honestly, unless you're a Marlins fan or a super baseball nerd like us two, you're not that deep in the weeds on the pitching staff for the Marlins. But he is projected to be one of the rising stars in the game, and over the weekend was told the team that he needed to have something checked out in his elbow because he was experiencing discomfort. And we all know what that means when somebody, specifically a pitcher, is experiencing discomfort in their elbow. It means nothing good is coming. And sure enough, within the next 48 hours after he gets checked out and the MRI is all clear, we're expecting the absolute worst for Yuri Perez. Chris, what about a landing spot for Jordan Montgomery in Florida? The Marlins want to spend some money? Does Jordan want to go pitch in Florida? I mean, if part of his thing is he doesn't want to pay income tax by playing in Texas, I know they don't have that in Florida, but man, what a blow for Yuri Perez and the Marlins. And the Marlins have sat on their hands most of this offseason after making the playoffs for the first time in a long time, and they've been criticized for doing it. Absolute fuck all this offseason. But was also partly predicated on the fact that their starting pitching has been pretty strong. They've had a lot of depth there. And now all of a sudden, one of the rising stars in the game and on their franchise looks like he might be on the shelf for a little while.
Well, let's be real. Miami's not going to do anything. They just won't. Unfortunately, it sucks because, you know, the talent that they have on that team, it's a lot of young talent. And I mean, good Lord, go out and bring in a Jordan Montgomery, like do something like that, but they just won't do it. And that's the frustrating part, is they won't spend the money. And I don't get it, because there's so much potential there and they just refuse to tap into it. And I don't understand. So, you know, you've got, you know, guys like Sixto Sanchez, Yuri Perez, you know, just to name just, you know, a couple of them. I mean, there's plenty more on that team. But to lose Yuri Perez would be awful. Hopefully, you know, it's something that we can see. You know, I'm going to go back to the Gerrit Cole thing with the rest. Hopefully that's all it is. But anytime you hear the elbow discomfort, I mean, you just go, oh, God, here we go.
You kind of grab your ankles and prepare for the worst.
Yes. Like they say in hockey, you know, no spit, no lube, you know, the 2-on-1, no back checkers, you know, that's how it's gonna be.
Matt saying that he wishes that the Mets would grab one of these guys on the cheap. He knows that they're rebuilding, but still, I mean, honestly, when it comes to Snell's one thing, because again, there's a wide spectrum of outcomes. And Jordan Montgomery, while boring, he's been incredibly consistent throughout his career. I mean, he's nothing flashy. He's more of a guy that's just going to give you good innings, but he proved in the postseason that when the games really come, you know, step up and the lights are as bright as they can possibly be, he can get you through those games. Again, I don't know. I'm not in those negotiating rooms. I have no idea what Jordan Montgomery is asking for, but I've kind of wondered if the Braves might even be able to get in on a Jordan Montgomery. You can never have enough pitching depth, and a guy like him, even if you overpay just slightly. I'm not saying that anybody should back up the Brinks for Jordan Montgomery, but the idea of keeping a Jordan Montgomery from one of your other rivals or one of the other potential playoff participants has got to appeal on some level to, you know, the teams near the top or that can at least afford to look in that direction.
I mean, it's worth a shot. Like you said, you can never have enough pitching, and that's, you know, and again, also to keep, you know, for example, for the Braves, if they were able to snag him and keep him away from New York, why the hell not? That's double one man. Less piece that the Mets would have that, you know, could go against you in October. Or, you know,
well, they got to get there first. They're not going anywhere.
Well, I was going to go with
right now, but once they get those October aspirations, yes. And this would slow the rebuild either way.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And that's, you know, that's the big part of it is, you know, for a guy like Steve Cohen, who has all the money in the flipping world, it's amazing to see him not, you know, go forward more than what we've seen and bring in a Snell or a Montgomery or anything like that. And that's amazing to me. And now with, you know, with the Yuri Perez, you know, possible long-term injury, you know, you, like I said, you know, Miami's not going to do anything. Unfortunately, that's just, you know, that's just how that's going to be. But, you know, a different ownership group or a different, you know, GM, well, it's not, I wouldn't say the GM's fault, you know, because everything comes from ownership with that. You know, why not? You know, make the move, go for it, you know. But it just, it's a shame when you have an injury like that to a young player and a team doesn't do anything to, you know, not cover it up, but help soften the blow or even upgrade by bringing in somebody else. It's frustrating to see.
Well, the fans in Miami deserve a little bit better. I mean, they deserve.
Oh God, yeah.
They deserve to have seen the team make some moves to stay competitive this season after rebuilding for years and selling off everybody after the times that they did win the World Series. Florida baseball fans are fickle. But the Miami fans are better than the Tampa Bay fans. And we've seen when you put a good product on the field in Miami that the fans will be there to support it. So I don't think opening up the checkbook for Jordan Montgomery is something that the Marlins can't afford or shouldn't pursue based off of whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish in keeping the ledgers in the right spot. Like, it's the short-term thinking with some of these franchises where they can't even imagine the fact that they'd make more money by making the playoffs and making a deeper run in the playoffs. They're just looking at the regular season and the checkbook's there and not going any further. I mean, you had Arizona make it to the World Series unexpectedly, and one of the first things their owner said was, hell yeah, we put the money back into the team. We had an unexpected windfall. Like, of course we were going to put that money back.
Yeah.
It was amazing to see. Again, another franchise that has struggled through multiple rebuilds, has looked aimless at times with some of the moves they're making, finally get their footing, finally take that next step, make the playoffs, have an unexpected run to the World Series, and rather than sit there and do nothing, they went out, signed a bunch of guys. Remains to be seen if it's going to pan out. If it's going to result in anything better than a World Series runner-up finish. But I'm sure the fans in Arizona would be quick to tell you, hey, at least the franchise is going for it. At least they believe enough in this team to and appreciate us enough as fans to go put money back into the damn thing.
That's all fans want. It's to see a team put forth the effort to win. That's, I mean, as a fan base, you know, if you go in every single year expecting your team to get their shit kicked in every year, that is, it's not fun. It's horrible every year to feel that way. So good on the Diamondbacks for doing that. Like you said, oh man, we made the World Series. We got all this money flowing in. Okay. Again, let's put it towards the team and build them back up, or continue to build, you know, build them up, and let's make another run at it. Why not? That's what is just, oh man, it's so maddening. The teams, you know, all it takes is a move here and there to really, you know, thrust your team forward and, you know, into contention for a division, and some teams won't do it. And I don't understand that. The Reds were guilty of that for a couple years.
Oh, and if we reverse things, well, and Matt bringing up, if your team doesn't do that as a fan base, where are you going to go?
Exactly. You ain't going anywhere.
But going back to Dylan Cease, kind of the same thing. San Diego pushed all their chips in over the last few years, acquiring Soto, getting Manny Machado, signing Blake Snell, doing all these things in an attempt to, you know, will their way into a deep postseason run and potentially a World Series victory. It didn't work out. Now Juan Soto is gone. They, you know, they lost Blake Snell to free agency. In some circles, people basically wrote them off, thought they were falling apart. What a difference a week makes. You trade for Dylan Cease, and now some of those same people are saying, well, maybe it's not so bad in San Diego. Maybe they've still got some pieces there. There's still some guys there that, you know, that on that team that can help them win and compete in both the short term and long term. You go out, you make the move for Dylan Cease, again, a piece that everybody was trying to add throughout this offseason, if you were a contender of any type. I know Atlanta straight up came out and said, we tried to get Dylan Cease and couldn't meet the demands. So for San Diego to have landed him in the midst of all of the commotion going on in New York, and I'm sure the conversations that the Dodgers and Astros had to be having, because if they're in on Snell, there's no way that they weren't also trying to check in on Cease. It's a surprise that he landed in San Diego, but a good one for those fans. And again, just for the franchise itself, because it shows that, hey, the GM hasn't given up on the players that are still there, and hopefully the fans aren't going to give up. And this is a show of good faith. Like, hey, we're still trying. We don't have the money. Things haven't worked out the way we wanted to be able to keep a Juan Soto. We aren't necessarily going to be huge players in free agency, but if a guy like Dylan Cease is available, we're going to do what we can to get him.
And all it takes is getting to October. That's all it takes.
Get that seat at the table, baby.
Exactly. Because you ain't going to win it if you ain't there. But you get there, you give yourself a shot. And that's what San Diego did. And that's just, you know, like I said, for a team, you know, with the opportunity to get to that spot, you know, by winning a division or competing, you know, above many of the other teams for the wild card spot. And to not put money in to your team, I don't understand that. And that's what, you know, for Miami, again, who made the playoffs last year, for them not to do anything, especially now with the Yuri Perez and, you know, injury, I mean, come on, make a move here. You've got a chance here to really, you know, compete for a wild card. You're not going to win the division. We're going to talk about that here in a minute, but you know, you're not winning the division, but my God, you can compete for a wild card. I mean, that's not out of the question at all. Go for it.
We've seen once you get those wild card spots, anything can happen. The Diamondbacks are yet another example of just get in and anything can happen. Texas. Any of the guys on your roster as both a collective and individuals can get hot, carry you through a couple of weeks, and crazier things have happened. So I don't understand why there's so much adverse thinking when it comes to making additions to your club and not wanting to pay the cost, either money or prospects, because some of these teams hold on to their prospects for dear life. And then those same guys, in much the Yankee situation, get to the bigs or finally end up on another team, and you wonder, well, if that franchise had a chance to trade that guy why the hell didn't they just take it? Because at the end of the day, prospects are just that. You're projecting that they could be great. when you have a chance to go get a player who is good or could be great, you just go, you should just go do it.
Well, what Casey Stern always said, Casey Stern, I obviously love the dude. Casey Stern always said on his show on MLB Network Radio, prospects are fun, but parades are better.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? Exactly. Prospects are, again, just prospects, like you said. But if I can turn a prospect into a Dylan Cease or a Juan Soto, that's going to push me over the edge and give me, you know, a World Series title, count me in. I could care less about having a Jason Dominguez if I'm going to win a World Series or two. I mean, it's just, I'd rather have that World Series title, because they can't take away the fact you're a champion. They will forever call you a champion. And you don't win championships with prospects in your minor league system. That's just, you know,
tough. Banners fly forever, baby.
Bingo. Yeah.
All right. We've talked about it a little bit, but opening day-ish starts in a couple of days. We've got that Seoul series going on over in Korea between the Dodgers and the Padres. We're getting closer to opening day. Teams are naming their opening day starters. In the case of the Reds, Frankie Montas has been named the opening day starter, somebody that they brought in under the offseason, trying to anchor that young pitching staff and, quite frankly, make up for the loss of Lodolo and others who are kind of dinged up over last season and come in not fully healthy, but just a little bit behind. How do you feel about the idea of Frankie Montas being the opening day starter, despite the fact that spring training has been just how much stock are you putting in the spring training for Frankie Montas?
Well, I'm perfectly fine with the fact that he's been named the starter. I think that that's okay. It allows Hunter Green to take a step back and, you know, I don't want to say put the pressure on him, but he started opening day last year, and that's okay. Andrew Abbott's not going to be your opening day starter. You know, it is what it is. Frankie Montas, when healthy, is a great pitcher. When healthy. And that's been the problem, you know. But the Reds took that gamble on, the, you know, the one-year deal. And, again, it, you know, spring training, I put some stock into it, but I don't. Because it's – spring training can be such a crapshoot. Now, I don't know if he's been working on, you know, certain things. If he has, then okay, then it's not that big of a deal. But if he hasn't, he's just getting absolutely shelled, then we might have a little bit of a problem. But, you know, overall, I'm okay with it. Again, it's a guy with experience, was a great pitcher in Oakland. In New York, he was injury riddled, and it is what it is. But again, when he's healthy, you know, he's a great pitcher, and he's going to be one that I think
Rex says Ricky Vaughn is the best opening day starter.
I can't argue that.
Nothing wrong with that Wild Thing taking the mound for you.
Exactly. But, you know, going back to Frankie Montas, I think that's, you know, I've got no issues whatsoever. The spring training struggles are just that. If he goes out there and flat out shoves on opening day, then it's not a big deal. But if he doesn't, then, yeah, we can put a little more stock into it and then really kind of be concerned. Because if he's got to take the ball every fifth day and get shelled, we got a problem.
Well, the Reds could have done that for free if they were going to pay Frankie Montas. They had plenty of guys who could go out there and get shelled, so I'm sure they're hoping for a little bit more.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the series in Korea, though. And any thoughts on, one, opening up the season early and then going back to spring training? And two, just on the series in general, are you excited to see the Dodgers and Padres play? I mean, I know I'm excited because baseball is fucking baseball this time of year. And because the games count, you can sign me up. But does the matchup do anything for you?
Oh, hell yeah, it does. It's going to be a great matchup. I mean, let's be real. This is a great matchup. And the atmosphere is going to be awesome. If you remember during COVID, you know, when we had like no sports, my God, you could get up at, 4 a.m. and watch the KBO. The KBO it's a lot of fun to watch. So the atmosphere is going to be great. You got the Dodgers and you got the Padres. And you've got two fantastic pitching matchups. Game one, sees Tyler Glasnow versus Yu Darvish. Game two, Joe Musgrove versus Yamamoto. I mean, the Dodgers are debuting their two top, you know, pitching acquisitions, you know, from the offseason. I mean, what more could you ask for?
I mean, this is going to be grand closing for Glasnow, I'm sure.
Oh, Jesus. Dude. Oh, my God.
Imagine signing Glasnow, or rather trading for, in the Dodgers case, and he pitches one game, and it's in Korea. They don't even get to see him in L.A., and he hits the shelf. That'd be so Glasnow of him.
That would be. But in all seriousness, I hope not, because it's, you know, Telegraph.
No, I'm certainly not rooting for it. It's just,
I mean,
he's got a track record. I mean, anything against Glasnow, but it's likely to happen at some point this season that Glasnow's going to
Yeah, more likely than not. Yeah, I'll give you that. But, you know, again, I mean, that matchup with Yu Darvish that's a great, you know, great game one matchup. That's a great one. And then, like I said, too, you got Joe Musgrove versus Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Like, count me in. And especially these guys going overseas and playing in Seoul, South Korea. And like I said, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I think the games are at 6 a.m., I want to say, on Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesday, I want to say the Dodgers are the home team. Thursday, the Padres are, I think is how it works. But
I have no idea. I just know that they play sometime in the middle of the night, and because of my job, I'm already up for it. So it's appointment television for me, but only because I'm awake.
Yeah, I'm going to be awake anyway. Yeah, exactly. But no, it's going to be, like I said, I'm here for it. It's, you know, real baseball to start it off. It's, you know, again, we're getting it rolling here. It does suck that they do have to go back. You know, back to spring training for a week or two, but actually, no, it would just be a week. Man, shit, season starts.
I was gonna say, season starts a week after they open. Like, man, we're next Thursday on the opening day officially here in the States. So
that's crazy, man. You lose track of time. You look at it, it's like, oh man, it's already March 18th. Wow.
Well, spring starts off really slowly, and then the next thing you look up and it's opening day. So
yeah, it's
and between insane. All the injury news, which is. I was talking with my brother earlier. It seems like it comes so fast and so furious that you can't even adjust before realizing, you know, another week has gone by.
Oh, I know. I mean, like, you know, we were talking about, you know, just getting ready for this show. I mean, all the news and notes, like, holy cow. I mean, we've spent already 51 minutes already talking about the comings and goings of Major League Baseball already. Like, that's crazy. That's, you know, there's been so much going on. And we've got real baseball starting up, you know, in 2 days. Like, it's amazing how time
has. What are we going to do when we have to just talk about the results of the actual games?
Well, we'll see how good they are. I mean, if the games suck, then it's, you know, not going to be as fun. But, you know, if it's, you know, if we got some good stuff going, then it's going to be a lot, you know, a lot better to talk about. They better back it up, man. They better bring it.
Well, I'm super excited to see Yamamoto pitch. I know that he didn't end up where I wanted it to end up, which is in Atlanta. But the aura, the excitement, all of the everything that surrounded Yamamoto between getting posted and coming over here now. And I know he hasn't had the greatest of springs just from a number standpoint, but I don't put much stock in that for certain guys, and he's one of them. So I'm hoping that he comes out and he's as advertised and he just kind of mows people down. For my own personal sake, I'd prefer that the Dodgers lose both these games. I know it's only 2 of 162 and they're fully capable of winning the next 160 afterwards, but nothing like getting a future playoff rival season started with just utter disappointment. And I know Dodgers fans are going to be super jacked up to see this new and improved addition of the Dodgers, and for them to lose to the Padres, who we know they think they're way better than, would just be pretty sweet to start the year.
That would be quite hysterical to see that. We'll see. But you know what, speaking of that, let's get into our National League predictions here.
Let's do it. Let's break down these divisions. You want to lead things off? Where are we going first?
Well, we're going to start off in the NL East, so I'm going to let you do it because
You're giving me the baton first because it's my home division.
Yeah, it's your home, so I'm going to let you go, man.
All right. Well, it's come as no surprise. I'm picking the Braves. There's no doubt in my mind that Atlanta will win this division yet again. Nothing happened in the offseason except for the Braves getting slightly better, which is crazy to think about after how last year went. I do think that the offense will take a step back, but when you're setting records with your offense the year before, taking a step back means that you're still probably going to be one of the best offenses in baseball. Pitching staff is solid. The addition of Sale doesn't hurt in the slightest. And whatever you get out of him is a bonus, but I expect big things from him this year. And most importantly, I expect him to stay a lot healthier than he has in the past. That may be foolish on my part, but I think that some of those things that happened were just such freak things. And sometimes, you know, we talked about it last week. You just need a new change of scenery. I think he's got a new Atlanta, new motivation. Atlanta should win the division. And right on their heels, look, I know people think that I can't stand Philadelphia, but there's a couple of friends of mine. And don't get me wrong, I can't stand Philadelphia. But when I talk about Philadelphia and I pinpoint guys on their team, a good friend of mine who's a Philly fan always questions whether or not if I'm actually a closeted Philly fan, because they've got a lot of guys that I just like. Like, how can you not like Bryce Harper if you like baseball? I mean, Bryson Stott is a guy who plays hard. JT Real Muto behind the plate. One of my favorite pitchers since he got drafted, and I still rue the day that he didn't fall to Atlanta in Wheeler. The fact that Wheeler pitches for Philadelphia breaks my heart because I love watching him pitch. I do hate me some Aaron Nola. I think Aaron Nola's quite overrated and has been throughout most of his career. But he's capable enough. They've got enough offense. They've got enough pitching. I hope this is the year that Atlanta finally gets past them in the playoffs somehow, but I easily see them finishing in second in the division. And then you run down the line, the rest of the division, it's just kind of a pick 'em. The Mets, Marlins, and Nats, probably in that order if you're just looking from a talent standpoint. Maybe a little bit surprising to hear that I have the Mets finishing third over the Marlins. But I think the Marlins have taken enough hits over the past month, and this Yuri thing just adds on to it to where I don't think they've done enough. And if the Mets can stay healthy, while they're still not going to look great and Mets fans are mostly still going to be disappointed, I think they're going to look competent enough in the division. And when you take away the expectations that come with a $300 million payroll and the highest payroll in baseball history, and everybody can, we're a year past that, they'll be able to just go out and play freely with a whole lot less expectations. I think they can surprise some people and finish in the middle of the division pretty easily. Then the Marlins are going to come in behind them because they've got enough talent, whereas the Nationals just don't. Now, the Nationals are going to be a fun watch here in a couple of years because they've got some kids coming. But they're quite a few years away on the pitching side, so that's where they've still got some work to do. They'll be a fun team, but they're going to finish firmly in last. So Braves, Phillies, Mets, Marlins, and then the lowly Nats. What do you got in the East for me, Chris?
I legit have it the same way. it's the Braves. I mean, I wrote down literally chop on. Like, that's all it is. You know, it's going to be rinse and repeat for them. They're just loaded top to bottom. You know, they just have to get past Philadelphia when it matters most. And that's, you know, if they can do that, you're going to see them really making some noise. It's just a matter of get past Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia, I wrote down, I mean, they're a pain in the ass. They really are. They embody Philadelphia. I mean, but again, they've got so many guys on that team. Like you had said, I mean, how can you hate some of these guys? Like, you simply can't. They're fun to watch. They're a scrappy team. They're good. I mean, they deserve to be where they are every single year because of, you know, the way they play, the talent they got. You know, they will firmly finish in second. It's just a matter of, you know, how far back they finish. They could be right on the heels of the Braves all season. Or they could, you know, be 5 to 10 games back. It just depends, you know, on how things play out. But it's definitely the Braves division, Philadelphia in second. The Mets and Marlins, you know, their 3-4. That could flip-flop either way. I'm going to go with the Mets because of the talent they have on the field and, you know, I think a little more consistency. You know, with everything going with Miami right now, with the, you know, Yuri Perez thing, you know, just a couple injuries, they didn't do, you know, what they could have or should have in the offseason to help solidify the team more than what they could have. So I think they will finish in fourth, and the Nationals, you know, they're going to be, you know, in the basement of the NL East once again. But like you had said, Scott, they've got some dudes coming, and you can't wait to see the talent that is set to come up, you know, and you know, as we move forward the next year or two, they're probably, I would say, about 2 years away from really, you know, making a lot of noise in the National League, but, or at least in the National League East. But overall, you know, again, just like you, Braves, Phillies, Mets, Marlins, and Nationals, that's just, you know, this one was a pretty easy division to break down.
Mets fan, friend of the show, my bar, also having the Braves, Phillies, Mets, Marlins, and Nationals in the same order. But him being a Mets fan, he says he'll just be happy that I'm picking shit if the Mets finish over 500. So there's that. There's high and low expectations all across the NL East. I'm going to let you take your NL Central then, since you so graciously gave me the NL East to lead off with. You take the NL Central, and I'll follow your lead on that.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate that, Scott. Well, I'm going to go with Cincinnati Reds to win the division. I think overall the moves that they had made last year from, you know, losing 100-plus games to, you know, competing for a wild card last year, this, you know, this team is just sickly talented. They really are. But it comes down to pitching. If they can get solid starting pitching, this team is going to be very, very dangerous. I think overall, top to bottom, they are the most talented team in the Central. You know, you've got guys like Matt McClain, Spencer Steer, obviously Ellie De La Cruz. You know, those are your three young studs that you have, you know, accompanied by Jake Fraley, Christian Encarnacion Strand. You still have Jonathan India, Tyler Stevenson, you know. This team is loaded. They really are loaded with talent. The TJ Friedl injury, that's going to suck. The fractured wrist after, you know, he dove for a ball in spring training to get hurt, that sucks. That's a big, you know, that's a big loss there. Because he's your center fielder. So now what do you do? You know, so now they, you know, they just made some moves. The one move I'm not real happy about was getting rid of Josh Harrison. I think that was – Josh Harrison's a guy that
did Josh get cut or
he did, yeah.
Oh, well, I missed that. I didn't see that.
Yeah, it came out earlier today that he was, you know, that he was not gonna make the team and he opted out of his contract. He wasn't gonna go back to he wasn't gonna go down the minors.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he's gonna be looking for a new team. If not, you know, he'll retire, which sucks because Josh he's a dude that in my opinion is exactly what the Cincinnati Reds need. Yeah, he's, you know, I want to say he's 35. I can't think of his age right off the top of my head, but he's like, I'm going to say 34, 35. He adds that veteran presence. The dude just loves to have fun, loves to be in the clubhouse, has, I mean, just a lot of versatility. And that's what this Reds team needs, especially with the injury to Friedl. You know, you can shift guys around. So that's something to watch out for because you don't have the Joey Votto anymore. So a guy like Josh Harrison would have been perfect and really would have helped solidified this young team. You know, yeah, he would have been a bench player and that's okay, but having a guy like that help these young guys, you know, moving forward, and especially in a division race, is going to be huge. Because the Cubs, I'm picking second, the Cubs are they're going to be there. This division's a two-horse race between Cincinnati and Chicago. I don't think Chicago did nearly enough to win the division. Yeah, Craig Counsell is a nice addition, but again, you have to do stuff, you know, to help build up your team to complement that move as well. And Chicago just simply didn't do that. Yeah, bringing back Cody Bellinger is nice, but, you know, and bringing in Imanaga, okay. there's still more you have to do. And they didn't do that. A team that did make a lot of moves is the St. Louis Cardinals, who I've got finishing third, but they're old. You know, they're good, but they're old. That's the problem with, you know, that St. Louis is going to run into. And then Milwaukee, I've got them finishing fourth, but let's be real. Third, fourth, and fifth, I got the Pittsburgh Pirates finishing fifth. Honestly, the Pirates can be as high as third. I mean, this could be, you know, the bottom three teams are so interchangeable. And that's how the Central has been for the last couple of years. This is a division that we have seen so much movement to where literally any one of the five teams could win the division. That's obviously different this year. But now the Pirates are, I mean, they've got some, you know, they've got a lot of talent. O'Neill Cruz has been on an absolute freaking heater this spring training. So if that carries into this, you know, this season with a Paul Skene set to come up, you know, holy cow. I mean, Pittsburgh, like I said, they could be as high as
third. As long as he learns how to slide, he'll be all right.
Well,
just don't get that leg caught underneath.
I mean, baby steps here on this, but it's, you know, there's so much in this division that could change depending on, you know, what we see from teams that we thought would be good in St. Louis and Milwaukee. I don't think they did enough and they lost too much. And it's, you know, it's prime now for a team like the Pirates to step up and make a run at second in the division, or even, you know, depending on how the chips fall, you know, could be as high as first. But I'm not, you know, it's going to take a lot for that to happen. But still, this division's so wide open outside of, you know, I think the Reds, and I think, you know, with what they have, I just think that there's just way too much for them, going for them, I should say, in this division. So to wrap it up, Reds, Cubs, Cardinals, Brewers, and Pirates. I know I rambled on a lot there, really, for not much, but yeah.
Well, you're going to hate me, but
of course I will.
Par for the course, but
yes.
I'm actually going to go just the opposite direction of you, but for kind of the similar reasons, just in the other way. Like, I think the Cubs win in this division. I think they did do just enough to keep ahead. Now, if they hadn't have kept Bellinger, I'm out. I think that the Cubs would have fallen back enough that they wouldn't. I know that down the stretch they kind of hit a roadblock and didn't end up making the playoffs, and that kind of upset Cubs fans a bit. But I didn't think they were too far off. The timing just wasn't right. The thing that concerns me most about the Reds and why I have them finishing second is just because it's so many kids who you're expecting to all not hit a sophomore slump. And we know how exciting Ellie can be. But if Ellie doesn't fix his problems, that could be a big problem for the Reds in general. I do like CES. I do think everything's been kind of overblown with McClain. I think he'll be fine. But I just worry about Ellie, and I worry about if they have enough pitching, despite going out and adding Montas and Martinez and a couple other guys to lengthen just the staff. Not necessarily the starting staff, but the whole pitching staff in general. Let's just be honest. Across the division, the pitching kind of sucks or is mediocre. Even Chicago's rotation is just okay. And without Corbin Burns, Milwaukee doesn't have a rotation that strikes fear into anybody anymore. You mentioned it. The Cardinals signed a bunch of guys older than us or the same age as us. And that's not a recipe for success in today's game. That's not even factoring in the fact that all of their guys are another year older and they weren't exactly a young team last year to begin with. So I am going to pick the Cubs to finish first in the division. I have the Reds following them up. I reluctantly will pick the Cardinals because they can't be any worse than they were last year. And I actually like the Pirates enough that I'm going to push them ahead of the Brewers. The Brewers losing Burns and starting to hit the hood. If things go sideways early for the Brewers, I see them moving on from Willie Adames in the last year of his contract. You already have the back injury to Devin Williams. He's on the shelf for 3 months. He'll get back just in enough time to re-up his value and get it to where they can move him and get some more youth. They've got a lot of young guys in there. They're in the middle of kind of this hybrid youth movement. And I think if they make a couple of right moves with the guys that they have that they can use as trade chips, they'll be right back in the conversation next year. But I'm going to slide them down to the bottom because Pittsburgh looks like that fun team. Like they are the, and ironically the same division, just different league. They are the Tigers for me in the NL Central. And while I picked the Tigers to be a surprise upset, that's just saying more about how awful I think the AL Central is in comparison to the NL Central. But I do think the Pirates showed a lot last year when they started off and were in first place for a good month and a half, which in the grand scheme of things isn't a lot, but for Pittsburgh, it's everything. They do have Cruz coming back. They've got a lot of young pitching coming up. I think we're all waiting, very anticipating the arrival of one Paul Skenes. So we've got him to look forward to, but he's not the only name. They got a couple of other guys if you're deep into the pitching game like they are. So I like what the Pirates got going, so I'm going to go Cubs, Reds, who I will have as a wild card team, Cardinals, Pirates, and then Brewers for the NL Central.
Well, okay. Then it just as a question, who has the best starting rotation in the AL or the NL Central? In your opinion.
Yikes.
I know. That's the thing. It's great because you said it all sucks, and I agree.
I mean, I'm going to give the edge to the Cubs, but again, it's not because they blow me away or the names are that sexy. I just think they're just slightly better than all their parts. Now, that may be proven wrong because I do like the guys that the Reds have. But the Reds' problem is they play in Great American Ballpark, and that's just such a tough pitcher's park. So no matter how good some of those guys may be, they're going to struggle to keep the ball in the yard. And if the Reds don't outscore a lot of people, they're going to, you know, it's the difference in between that pitching staff. If the Reds' pitching staff swapped places with the Cubs, I'd be picking the Cubs the same. So I guess it's more the ballpark than anything that has me like more down on the Reds as a pitching staff on the whole than I do prefer. I just prefer the Cubs ever so slightly.
Okay, fair enough. I was just curious because, I mean, it's
– yeah.
I think with Hunter Green, you know, if he
– I don't know what to make of Hunter Green, man. I want him to be good, but he's just – he's not quite there, and the injuries keep piling up, and I just need – he just needs to like
– he needs to learn to pitch.
Yeah, well, there's that. Like, in all honesty, yes.
Well, but... yeah, because you can't – like, when you've got a fastball that it's 100-plus and you pump it in there, like, as the saying goes, MLB – I mean, hitters, these guys can time up a fighter jet. Like, that's how good these hitters are. So if you're just pumping gas in there, yeah, they're just going to sit back and they're going to tee off on you once they get you timed up. It's the matter of learning how to pitch.
Yeah.
Of – changing the, you know, the eyesight, you know, the speeds and that kind of stuff there. That's what he's got to learn to do. Once he does that, oh my God, the sky's the limit for Hunter Green. And that's what we have to, you know, that's what we have to see. Once he does that, oh man, I mean,
he could be the Black Spencer Strider.
Yes. Exactly. that's exactly what I was going to say. Took the words right out of my mouth, man. Like, dude, unbelievable.
But no, great. I mean, it's seriously, the comparison is there. I mean, I see Spencer Strider when I see him, but he absolutely has to learn how to do it. And he's got to stay healthy. I mean, he's had a lot of injuries and has been really banged up for a young guy with his skill set. So if he can stay healthy and get that experience and get in there, I think that it's in there. We all saw what he did in high school. We know that he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He was the number one overall pick. He has all the accolades, but he's just got to put all together. And if he does, then all bets are off. Then the Reds, I think, could run away with the division. But I got to see it first when it comes to him. And Mike pointing out that he also is afraid of the sophomore slumps. And you can sustain one or two, but you need
you can't have three. Or
I was going to say, you need a couple of them to power through that and not be subjected to that. Whereas, you know, the Cubs aren't necessarily looking, you know, at that. I mean, they've got a bunch of veteran guys, and while they do have some young guys peppered in, they're not solely reliant on them. Whereas the Reds, they are really counting on all these young guys to continue their growth and for none of them to take a step back. And as the injuries have kind of started to mile up and you get the suspension of Marte, their margin for error and their depth has dried up considerably. So they're not going to have really anywhere to turn if these guys do struggle. They're just going to have to ride it out.
Well, now you made me kind of feel like an ass for the homer pick there on that one.
I mean, again, I have the Reds right there. They're one of my wild card teams, and I think that if things go, if just a couple things break their way, they should be there.
Well, let's be real. Like I said, and you're in the same agreement as me, it's a two-team division.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. Sure. I mean,
I don't think that the Cardinals, like I said, the Cardinals were so bad last year that just by virtue of who they have on that team, they can't be that bad again.
They can't suck that bad again. Yeah,
exactly. But I have no faith in their over the hill pitching staff. And again, there's nothing super exciting on that roster when you get past the top two names of Arenado and Goldschmidt, and they're getting old.
They're getting old.
They're not getting any younger. So,
yeah. Oh boy,
when you're dependent on those two for a lot of your offense, that spells trouble, because they aren't. I don't know if they're at the point in their careers anymore where just the two of them is enough to carry that entire offense, which is what they're going to need most days.
Exactly. Yeah, because they just don't have the talent top to bottom like they used to. So, well, let's switch out to the National League West.
And I'm going to let you take the nope. I'm going to let you take this one, okay, because I don't want to. I know how you feel about me and my opinions of Colorado, and I don't want to upset you with any of my Colorado takes. So you go on ahead and you lay things out, and then I'll come in and do my soft landing.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is the Dodgers division, plain and simple. They went out and they spent absolute buttloads of money, and they're going to win the division. As if they needed any help, they went out and they get Shohei Ohtani. They bring in Yamamoto, and you got Teoscar Hernandez. You've got just dudes that you're continuously bringing in. Tyler Glasnow was another one via trade, and then he signed an extension. The team is they're solid. And now you've got Mookie Betts moving all over the infield because they're trying to figure out what Gavin Lux is and can do. That's the only real question mark that I have for the Dodgers. Otherwise, yeah, it's Los Angeles. And second, I've got the Diamondbacks because what they proved last year, and they made some solid additions, you know, bringing in a guy like,
Matt's saying that you
see Suarez. Holy crap, I could think.
And I'm sitting there trying to. Dude, teacher who just comes in dropping motherfuckers, which that's fine. I'll take that.
That's exactly what it is. It's exactly, yeah. But the moves the Diamondbacks made, you know, were exactly what we had talked about just a little bit ago. They got the windfall of money from the run to the World Series. They're putting that money back into the team. They've made, you know, moves that are going to continuously keep them in that spot. That's where it's going to be. I mean, that you know, there's really nothing else to say about Arizona. They're going to be there when it matters most. You've got a guy like Corbin Carroll who shows you why he is one of the best young players in the league, hands down. You know, you've got, you know, a pitching staff, you know, that, you know, they get the job done, can, you know, in a division where you're facing the Padres, the Dodgers, well, the Giants, and, you know, Colorado, a team that can put up offensive numbers, you know, you've got a guy like a Zach Gallen who can lead that, and a Brandon Pfaadt, you know, stuff like that. You know, it's those kind of moves and keeping those guys there and bringing in guys who, you know, to supplement the talent on that roster is what's going to keep Arizona where they are. And like I said, they're not going to win the division by any means, but they're going to grab a wild card spot. Now, flipping back here to the third spot, I've got San Diego. I had him fourth because I wasn't quite sure, but the Dylan Cease edition is you know, I think that's going to put him over the top for me and certainly, you know, snag that third spot. You've got a rotation with Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove, and
Michael King.
Dylan Cease. What's that?
Michael King.
Oh, yeah, Michael King. I forgot. Yeah, it's part of the Juan Soto deal. That's a name you completely forget depth, about.
Some of that depth they stole from the Yankees.
Yeah. They got deep down in that farm system to grab those guys. But, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Michael King was – I mean, he was the namesake of that Juan Soto deal. I mean, he's one that's going to – you know, that you're expecting to, you know, to see make moves. What are you going to get from Fernando Tatis? That is a big question. Ha-Sung Kim, who I think is the best pure shortstop on that team, even over Xander Bogaerts, who plays that position. If you watch, Ha-Sung Kim is – you know, he's the guy on that team in terms of – shortstop. Unfortunately, they moved him over to second because you're paying Xander Bogaerts. But you still have Manny Machado. What are you going to see from him? What are you going to see from Tatis? These guys have to step up. And if they do, you know, San Diego's going to be, you know, in the hunt for a wild card spot. And that's just, you know, they're not what we've seen in the past where they went for it, but they've, you know, they've made solid enough moves that are going to keep them in the hunt for a wild card spot. You know, AJ Preller is the one that AJ Preller is, you know, he gets crazy sometimes and goes out and makes all these moves. Surprisingly, he didn't do that. And it was kind of, you know, yeah, he goes out and he deals Juan Soto, but you know, that was a nice cost cutting move there. It saved him a bunch of money. But then, you know, they've also added players in the right spots. And you're going to see a team that's, you know, it's going to be there with the talent they already have. The San Francisco Giants, I got finishing fourth. I don't think they did enough. Bob Melvin is a great addition as a manager. But, I mean, they didn't go out and they didn't bring in the big name guy like they wanted. I don't know who really wants to play in San Francisco. That's kind of what we've seen, you know, recently, you know, guys just haven't wanted to sign there. So that's problematic for him because, you know, you're not bringing in big name studs. I mean, you brought in Aaron Judge from last year, but that was it. I mean, other than that, you know, all the talk was, you know, all these big name guys, you know, they ran on Shohei, they ran on Yamamoto. They were in on, well, I mean, they did bring in Chapman, but I've heard Snell linked there. I've heard Jordan Montgomery. I've heard Cody Bellinger. But they didn't do anything. And that's going to be San Francisco's problem. You know, yeah, Bob Melvin's a great manager, but he didn't get much done in San Diego. And he's got a hell of a lot more talent in San Diego than what he does in San Francisco now. So, it's an uphill battle for, you know, for the Giants. I just don't see them really doing much. And then finishing fifth, I've got the Colorado Rockies. As much as I love the Rockies, oh boy, it's a tough division for them. They've got offensive talent, but that's, you know, that's it. It's tough. They didn't go out and, you know, you're not going to be able to sign pitchers. Those are guys you're going to have to deal. You got to deal for it, and they just haven't been able to do it. Despite the fact you've got Chris Bryan, you've got Nolan Jones, you have Brendan Rodgers, you've got Ryan McMahon, guys like that. You know, yeah, they're going to put up offensive numbers. Nolan Jones is an absolute stud, but you know, if you're scoring 11 runs but you're giving up 12, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be tough. You know, they do have, I mean, they've got a solid enough pitching staff, but it's going to take, you know, it's going to take guys to step up and really, you know, go, you know, the extra mile, in terms of putting up numbers, you know, for Colorado to really do anything. But unfortunately it's tough, playing in Coors. But you know, so I'm going to wrap it up with the Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Padres, Giants, and finishing up with the Rockies. So that's where I'm sitting.
Well, if it's my turn, then I'm just going to keep it brief on the Dodgers. They're going to win this division probably by 15 games. There's nothing more to say. Anything less would be a disappointment. The Dodgers are not the Mets. They will get it done. All the money will be well spent. It's up to them to then figure it out in the playoffs. Here's hoping they don't. Second is where we diverge, because I believe that this year the standings are going to finish in the NL West how we all thought they were going to finish last year. That's right. I have the Padres sneaking up in that second spot. I don't think it has anything necessarily to do with the Dylan Cease addition. That was nice. But I just think that was a team last year that tried to get a little bit over their skis. They tried to play in the big boy pool with the Dodgers. They took aim at them. They talked trash all offseason. They thought they were just as good, and it blew up in their face. This year they come in with their hats in hand, a little humbled. They got a new manager. I don't think that you get better by getting rid of Juan Soto, but I do believe that when you lose a little bit of star power, it takes somebody else stepping up, and it as a collective, they're all going to play better. The Padres lost some insane amount of one-run games last year, and if you cut that number in half, they would have finished over the Diamondbacks for a division. I think they get it done this year. I think their concentration level will be up. I think they'll play better. I look for another full season out of Tatis with the suspension and the injuries completely in his rearview mirror. I think they're going to surprise people. And the reason why I have the Diamondbacks finishing in third is because of the World Series hangover. I think they finished a little bit early. They got a little bit farther, a little bit earlier in their rebuild than I think they were planning. And while I do think that they're a good team and they have a good, bright future ahead of them, I think they take a step back this year because playing into October was unexpected. They'll be tired. And all we've heard all offseason is how they want to get back there. They know what they got to do. But knowing and doing is two different things. And having that target on your back is also something that you can't just ignore. They're the defending NL champs. If they don't think they're going to get everybody's best shot every single time they're out on their field, they're crazy. So I think they take a step back ever so slightly, which allows the Padres to move up into that second place. I actually like the Giants a little bit further than a lot of people do. I do think that they made just enough improvements, but again, that's because they didn't do jack shit last offseason. And I think they're going to actually be the dark horse surprise team that swoops in and signs Snell, which Chris knows from earlier this offseason that I predicted that Blake Snell would end up in San Francisco when the offseason started. Now I believe that they will swoop in, land him last second, keep him from any of those other teams. It won't be enough to help them finish anything better than fourth, but there'll be a much more interesting team.
Whoa, hold on. We got breaking news. Blake Snell signs 2-year, $62 million deal with the Giants from John Heyman.
Holy shit, dude! I didn't even see that!
It just popped up.
Well, there you go. I actually, that doesn't surprise me, considering I just said that was what was going to happen. I see that the text came up 4 minutes ago. I promise you I didn't look at that. Again, you can go back and check the history. I have said that Snell was going to end up with the Giants. Boom, there it is. So the Giants land their guy. Snell stays out of New York. Thank Jesus. So now we know what the Snell is happening. Snell is now a Giant. And wow. I don't think I couldn't have done that again if I tried. So Snell with the Giants, they're still going to finish fourth. And then there's the Rockies. Holy shit, we got that all in before 9:30. Woo! I'm a motherfucking prophet, baby.
That's amazing. Yeah, according to our article that we had posted on iscincy.com, our predictions, I had Blake Snell, Giants 7 years, 210. You had 7 years, 230. That was from November 26th. So we're a bit off with the 2 years.
We're off with the years and the money. But none of us also anticipated him signing with a week to go before the season started. So there's that.
Man. So now I'm sure. I mean, now with that being the case. Ooh.
Are you switching? You waffling? You waffling before we get out of here? Because we got to
wrap because screw the Giants. Screw them. I don't care.
Oh,
don't
yeah, care. And the Rockies are going to finish dead last because they suck. They've got great schools, though, so there's that.
And they've got their uniforms are top-notch as well.
Yeah, their uniforms aren't bad. That's
fine. Yeah, they're legit. I would rock my city Rocky City Connect if it wouldn't clash with the green screen, so I can't.
That's right. I forgot that you have that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got the hoodie too. A hoodie. It's sick, man. I love it. But man, that was good. We covered a lot, man.
I was going to say, we got in everything we needed to get to. And as time runs down, is there anything else that you want to? Patience? Or should we wrap things up and get out of here?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Let's wrap it up.
Alrighty, boys and girls, that's going to do another episode of the Backwards Day Baseball Show. Check us out everywhere you find your podcasts. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We are here on the Craft Brewed Sports Podcast Network, and we are on Impact Cincy Sports Cincinnati. You guys have a good night. Thanks for watching. Follow, rate, review, subscribe, do all that fun stuff. Chris and I will catch you next week. We appreciate you. We are out of here.